So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning. I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, as Democrats, even some Republican lawmakers, call for a special prosecutor to investigate Donald Trump's presidential campaign ties to Russia and the firing of former FBI Director Jim Comey. Trump says he did the right thing and tells the graduating class at Liberty University to ignore the critics. Oh, ain't that special. Attorney General Jeff Sessions reverses Obama-era policy, ordering federal prosecutors to seek the toughest charges and sentences for all drug-related crimes, including low-level nonviolent drug offenses. We'll speak with someone from the Brennan Center for Justice about this action. Also, TSU canceled Senator John Cornyn's commencement speech just a couple days before he was to speak. I guess he saw what happened to Bethune-Cookman, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. And speaking of DeVos, we have an exclusive, the granddaughter of Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune, who will talk about her reaction to DeVos speaking at Bethune-Cookman. You do not want to miss that. Also, folks, the Trump administration wants to establish a commission to look at voter fraud, but a new study finds that black voter turnout was its lowest in 20 years. It's called voter suppression. All right, we'll talk about that on the show as well. All right, folks, also on the show, white supremacists carry torches to protest the removal of a Confederate statue in Virginia. We'll talk about that. It's time to bring the funk on News 19 TV 1. Let's go. During college football, that could very well describe every time Donald Trump opened his mouth when he complains about anything dealing with Russia and its investigation. Of course, he's still dealing with the fallout of firing FBI Director Jim Comey. Now, of course, he may very well nominate a new head of the FBI just this week. Democrats and some Republicans say it is time for a special prosecutor to investigate the firing of Comey. Trump says, oh, I did nothing wrong. It's all good. Why are y'all sitting here making so much noise about that? Well, it's probably because you screwed up and you kept lying to the American people and sending out your spokesmen and spokeswomen to keep lying as well. Well, this weekend, Trump gave the commencement speech at Liberty University. Rotate.
Nothing is easier or more pathetic than being a critic. Because they're people that can't get the job done.
So exactly what job have you actually done since you've been president? Pretty much a Muslim ban that will go to the courts today that will be blocked again for the second time. Or let's say screwing up the firing of the FBI director. And of course, losing on health care the first time. And then right now, it's polling at 17% on the second time. Gotcha. All right, folks, here in D.C., many folks were on the Sunday morning news shows blasting his decision. Former head of the DNI, James Clapper, had his comments to say about Russia and Trump. Press play.
Their first objective was to sow doubt, discord, and dissension in this country. And the Russians have to be celebrating with the minimal expenditure of resources and what they have accomplished. And, of course, what's unfolded now, here the lead of the investigation about potential collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign has been removed. So the Russians have to consider this as another victory on the scoreboard for them.
Virginia Senator Mark Warner, top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, he said something is fishy when it comes to Trump and Russia.
I think he made some mistakes last fall, but I've never lost that confidence. I know him. I think he's a straight shooter. And I think it's pretty remarkable, virtually unprecedented. One, that an FBI director is fired this way. Two, an FBI director being fired when he was leading the investigation into ties between Trump officials and the Russians. To fire him mid-investigation, boy, oh, boy, that raises a whole lot of questions.
And you know, Saturday Night Live could not resist the wonderful material they got this week.
Okay, sir, but back to James Comey. Your staff has been insisting all week that you didn't fire him because of his Russian investigation.
No, I did.
Wait, what?
I fired him because of Russia. I thought he's investigating Russia. I don't like that. I should fire him.
And you're just admitting that?
Uh-huh.
But that's obstruction of justice.
Sure, okay.
Wait, so did I get him? Is this all over? Oh, no, I didn't. Nothing matters. Absolutely nothing matters anymore. Fine.
And Spicy's back.
That's right, Spicy's back. Sarah's out. Let's do this. First question, Michelin Man. Oh, I'm sorry, I meant Glenn.
Yes, some people are saying that based on President Trump's tweets that he is unhinged. Would you agree?
Oh, my God. Glenn, do I come to your job and slap the 7 or 8 hot dogs out of your mouth? You're really going to ask me that? This is offensive. If he's crazy, he's crazy like a fox with mental problems.
Oh, let's go to our panel. A. Scott Bolden, of course, a lawyer, former chair of the D.C. Democratic Party, Lauren Victoria Burke, political analyst and writer for NBC Black, Eugene Craig III, vice chair, Maryland Republican Party. Okay, you know, at the end of the day, the guy lied all last week. He's going to lie this week. And so we might as well just get ready for it.
It's really interesting. Does anybody in America really believe anything that Donald Trump says?
Not ever. A damn thing.
Not one. I read in the Post where there was a Quinnipiac poll that said even his supporters, if there was one word to describe his presidency, it was idiot, overwhelmingly. And that's hard to say.
And they're pretty dumb because they still support
president.
Him.
Exactly. And so I think when we need to believe him, the real danger is when we need to believe him, we may not, and it will put us in either greater crisis.
And Eugene, that's the big problem right there.
That is the big problem. There will come a time where we will have a serious issue, and we will need to believe the president. And, you know, as a lot of headlines said, there's a credibility crisis right now. You know, I wouldn't go as far as calling the supporters dumb. I think, you know,
they're dumb. No. See, right there, this is my problem. We always say, hey, we never should call them dumb. You're dumb. If you're married to an illegal immigrant and you voted for Trump and now you're going, hey, man, God, he deported my husband. Boom! He said he was going to do that.
And we told you that he was going to do that,
and you voted for him anyway. I voted against the guy twice, all right? So, but my thing is this. You know, after last week and after the preceding weeks, there's a crisis of credibility in the White House right now. The presidents have flipped. The president literally, within a 72-hour time span, you know, didn't flip-flop. I mean, literally probably did like an octagon when it came to positions on the Comey situation.
Yeah.
The public's, you know, vehemently opposed to it and wants an independent commission. I think that's where we should go.
Lauren, we can't trust nothing this man says. Nothing. If he says, I actually had Popeyes for dinner, we can't trust he actually ate that.
I'm just getting to that point.
The thing about this is that Donald Trump doesn't understand that all of this is going to come out. The truth is going to come out. And it's going to come out in the worst way because he set it up that way.
Jim Comey's already said, I won't testify privately. It needs to be public.
Yeah.
You know what that says?
Whether
I'm about to drop the hammer on him.
Well, it's not just Comey. It's Clapper. It's Andrew McCabe. It's Flynn. One of those guys is going to push the magic button. It's Rosenstein. Somebody is going to get to the point where they're like, I've had enough. And Trump doesn't understand that the nature of these stories, the nature of the truth is that it always comes out. So he is going to fall, and he is going to fall hard.
Well, speaking of falling hard, of course, during the campaign, he said to black folks, what the hell do you have to lose? Well, guess what? AG Jeff Sessions, we see what he is doing right now when it comes to rolling back Obama-era changes when it comes to America drug laws. What does he want to do? Oh, let's just throw folks in prison. He says even the low-level nonviolent drug offenders, yeah, that's what he actually decided to do, telling prosecutors go after the harshest sentences available. Even though we've had bipartisan efforts to roll back mandatory minimums and people in prison, well, that's what we have going on now because of AG Jeff Sessions. And to the 13% of the black men out there who voted for Donald Trump, yes, you're stupid too, okay? Because guess what? This has nothing to do when it comes to jobs or the economy. It has to do with him being, I'm going to be Mr. Tough on Crime. He made that announcement just last week. Here's Sessions.
Part of President Trump's promise to keep America safe. If you are a drug trafficker, we will not look the other way.
Hold on. Here's former AG Eric Holder, who criticized the action.
We need to ensure that incarceration is used to punish, to deter, and to rehabilitate, but not merely to warehouse and to forget. We also must confront the reality that once they're in that system, people of color often face harsher punishments than their peers.
In a written statement, Holder said the new policy was not tough on crime, but dumb on crime, and that it was an ideologically motivated cookie-cutter approach to prosecuting drug offenders. Joining us right now from New York via FaceTime, Ames Grart, counsel at the John L. New Justice Council, Brennan Center for Justice. Got to ask you, Ames, it's amazing when you see this action. I mean, you've had the Koch brothers. You have other Republicans who are saying this makes no sense. But, oh, tough guy Jeff Sessions all of a sudden says, oh, no, lock him up, throw the key away.
It's exactly, we were saying something similar right after the election. There are around a handful of Republican senators who don't support criminal justice reform, and they just happen to make one of them the attorney general. It's disappointing, and I can't say we were surprised by Friday's change in policy, but it's extremely disappointing.
And let's be honest, Ames, he lied at his confirmation hearing. Oh, I'm going to protect civil rights. I love civil rights. Here's my record. But all of his actions since becoming AG shows he does not care at all about civil rights.
There are a few pieces of evidence you have to draw the conclusion. I think you may be right. As soon as he became attorney general, he took steps to discontinue supervision of police departments in Baltimore and across the country that have civil rights problems. And now this, which is going to send more people to prison without a public safety reason. I can't say we're surprised, but it's troubling.
Do you believe that the Republicans in the past who supported criminal justice reform, do you believe that they're actually going to step up and say, look, we're going to oppose Senator Jeff Sessions? Do you believe they're going to be as critical as others? In fact, I saw a tweet from Rand Paul. I'm going to pull up in just a second where he criticized this decision by Jeff Sessions.
There's actually two reasons for hope that we've heard. Number one is that Trump sent Jared Kushner, his apparently most trusted advisor, to Capitol Hill a couple months ago to talk with Chuck Grassley about sentencing reform. And just yesterday, there was a story, call it a leak maybe, that Trump wasn't all too happy with Jeff Sessions' charging policy decisions. So there might be some reason to hope that Republicans will see what's happening, see how this is going to hurt people, and step up, and maybe they'll push for change. I'm going to retain some hope, but you and I and everyone who cares about this issue, we're going to have to keep working on it, regardless of whether we think they're going to help.
Ames, we sure appreciate it, man. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Scott Bolden, when you look at this decision again, this is Jeff Sessions being who Jeff Sessions always was and always will be.
This may be the toughest and most detrimental policy he's put in place.
So far.
As a former prosecutor, we take the lead from the top. He has unleashed U.S. attorneys and assistant U.S. attorneys around the country, right, to in one failed policy, turn back the clock and begin harsh sentencing on lower-level drug offenders. I don't know how you reverse that, though, if you're in the Senate or the House, because this is an administrative decision. But it's a budget buster for most states.
Here's Senator Rand Paul. This is what he posted on his Twitter account. Shelly, go to my iPad. Mandatory minimum sentences have unfairly and disproportionately incarcerated too many minorities for too long. Attorney General Sessions' new policy will accentuate that injustice. Instead, we should treat our nation's drug epidemic as a health crisis and less as a lock them up and throw away the key problem, Lauren.
But that's what Sessions wants to do. He wants to lock up minorities. It's like that's not a problem for him. Mm-hmm. The thing about this, thank goodness, is this is just on the federal level, because the states are now ahead of the federal level on justice reform, particularly in Texas and Georgia. And even though you're right, it does filter down. People Xerox copy the federal legislation. They put it in the states. But the point is, I don't think this is such a small percentage of the prison population that in the grand scheme of things, the real actions are on the state level.
The thing is this, if Jeff Sessions wants to use full maximum mandatory minimums when it comes to prosecuting, I think the first prosecution should be for Jeff Sessions perjuring himself to Congress. This is going to be a real harm to the This is going to do real harm to the African-American community. I think the House and Senate should move criminal justice reform legislation right away.
Hold tight 1 second. We come back. An exclusive conversation. The granddaughter, Dr. Miriam Cloud-Bethune, weighs in on Betsy DeVos giving the commencement at Bethune-Cookman. It's a conversation you do not want to miss. 15 after the hour, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
We had at Bethune-Cookman, Betsy DeVos, Education Secretary, appointed by Donald Trump, who only got in by one vote. Not only did she give the commencement, she also was given an honorary degree. Students turned their back. The audience booed. They didn't like what she had to say. Well, let's find out what the granddaughter of the founder of Bethune-Cookman, Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune, has to say. Dr. Evelyn Bethune, I got an email last week saying she wanted to speak, and she only wanted to speak exclusively with me right here on Tom Joyner and TV One. Dr. Bethune, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning to all of you.
First and foremost, how did you feel when you heard Betsy DeVos was invited to give the commencement at Bethune-Cookman in 2017?
Well, first of all, I thought that I had stepped into Bizarro World and that somebody was telling me a joke. Mm-hmm. And then I was highly insulted. And my family was insulted. My grandson was graduating, so we were really, really upset.
Wait a minute. Your grandson was graduating in that audience?
Yes, he was. He's graduating with his master's degree in transformative leadership. And he kept saying, Grandma, you know, they're going to change this, right? I said, I don't think so, because they don't know how to graciously step back and reconsider. Most of the students were very bothered, and we protested. It was the first time in my life that I held a picket sign on the campus of Bethune-Cookman University against Bethune-Cookman University.
How did you feel when the university president handed her an honorary degree from Bethune-Cookman?
Well, let me just say that people say all the time, girl, I know your grandmother's turning over in her grave. Well, I know this time she was standing up straight. And she just, I just was awestruck. I said, this cannot be possible. It cannot be happening at Bethune-Cookman, founded in what we're founded in. I just could not believe, because there were so many other venues that we could have utilized if we wanted to bring her to campus.
Have you had a conversation with University President Edison Jackson or the chair of the board? Have they said anything to you or the family?
Of course not. And they didn't, because they very seldom talk to us about anything.
You're not on the board?
Oh, no. This is a board that has very little transparency, and we are concerned as alumni, not just as family, but as alumni. And we are looking at not just the Betsy DeVos issue, but a level of relationship and transparency that Bethune-Cookman is moving away from. We are located in the middle of Midtown, the hood in Daytona Beach, and have been an anchor for the community, and we are losing that. So there are a lot of things that are concerning us, not just Betsy DeVos. She's like the tip of the iceberg right now.
What was your chief opposition to Betsy DeVos speaking at the commencement?
I believe that the opposition came, and it wasn't, and people are saying, well, she was a white woman. I said, no, we've had other cultures speak. It wasn't about her ethnicity, her race. It was about her platform. And the fact that she has no credentials that qualify her for the position that she's holding currently at the national level, and no credentials that qualify her for an honorary doctorate. I think it was insulting to give her an honorary doctorate.
Sybil?
Based on what her background is and what her knowledge base is.
Doctor, there were rumors that there was a large donation that was made in exchange for Betsy DeVos's appearance and speaking at the school last week. Do you know if there's any foundation to that?
There are a lot of rumors, and the number changes depending on who you're talking with. I'm told that she left Daytona and went to Orlando and said that even if the national budget didn't have money for Bethune-Cookman, that she and her family would personally make a donation. Well, you know, all that's well and good, but you can sell your soul to the devil and end up in hell. And so we better be very careful who we take money from.
I've got to ask you this here. Not only when you talk about giving the honorary degree and the student reaction, I just got a text message from a conservative who said, come on, Roland, those BCC students made a fool of themselves. Were you proud to see them exercise their First Amendment rights and express their displeasure at Betsy DeVos?
Absolutely. Our students have learned that this country was founded on civil disobedience. If we didn't learn how to stand up and say no, we'd still be picking cotton. And so we have to understand that we have the right in this country right now, you know, to express our displeasure. And those students earned the right after 4, 5, 6 years of going through to say that they weren't happy with who their speaker was. This should have been about them, and it wasn't.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. And shout out to the faculty that turned their backs and protested,
absolutely,
too.
And I will tell you, it took a lot, because no matter what anybody says, there was some undercurrent and there was some, you know, threatening going on in terms of if you do this, then this could happen. And nobody, everybody's saying, well, you know, that didn't happen. Well, yes, it did. Yeah. And so for those students to stand up, they took a chance that they might not get their degree, you know, and they marched in the street. They didn't just stand and turn their back. They protested the week before as well and got their pictures taken so that they could get pulled aside and told, you know, you better hunker down and you better not do certain things. But they stood their ground, and I am extremely proud of them.
Doctor, where do you think this will go from here?
My hope is that the university will start to understand that they cannot just shove certain things down the throats of their students, their faculty, their alumni, and no matter how much they don't value our input, that they have to start to value the input, because the university can't stand without all of those ingredients.
Dr. Bethune, I've done 14 commencements, and I've had students who said, we requested you. Do you believe that Bethune-Cookman, moving forward, should reach out to students and say, who do you want to hear at your commencement, as opposed to just administrators deciding?
Absolutely. You know, our students have earned the right. They are bright. They are doing incredible things in school and as they move forward. And they have the right, even if you give them a list of choices and say, this is the budget that we're working with, include them and give them that much respect.
Yeah.
To feel like you produced a quality product that has enough sense to know who they want to hear talk to them.
Was Donna Brazile scheduled to speak?
Donna Brazile spoke last year.
And
we would have loved to have had her back. She was fabulous.
Okay, it was last year.
And she's been one of my sheroes for a long time. I was truly honored and wish that she could have been back for the second time.
I know you're going to chuckle when they see it. If y'all don't act right, we're going to mail you your degrees. If
and
I recall, mine was mailed.
Did you know what the students said? They said, mail it. And they turned around and booed some more.
That's great.
Hey, thank you for being here, Evelyn.
To the Posh Firm, and thank them for getting me on the air with you. And thank you, Roland, for you've been to Bethune-Cookman.
Yes, I have.
And we want you to come back.
Well, tell them
I have to come back and stand on the sidewalk with me.
Tell them I'll come back and do commencement. I'll turn it out.
We'll all stand on the sidewalk with you, Doctor.
God bless you, Sybil. I'm looking forward to hearing from all of you. And you know, we have a book out, so we want to get in your book club, too.
You got it.
All right, Dr. Evelyn Bethune, granddaughter of Bethune-Cookman founder, Dr. Mary McLeod Bethune. Thanks a lot. We appreciate it.
God bless you.
You know what I was thinking about? The incoming freshman class. What are they thinking with all this bad press as they're preparing to go to Bethune-Cookman
right.
in the fall, you know?
Interesting.
And the parents of those freshmen. Yeah.
All right. Tom and Sybil, thanks a lot.
26 past the hour. Good job, bro. Tom, join the
morning show. All right, folks, also here at TV One at Texas Southern University in Houston over the weekend, that was also a change. Senator John Cornyn of Texas was supposed to speak. They dropped him because they feared what would happen at Bethune-Cookman would happen at TSU. Here's what they posted on the Facebook page. We asked Senator Cornyn to instead visit with our students again at a future date in order to keep the focus on graduates and their families. We, along with Senator Cornyn, agree that the primary focus of commencement should be a celebration of academic achievement. And he also, of course, agreed with that as well. U.S. Representatives Sheila Jackson Lee and Al Green, who are already scheduled to speak, maintain their invitation to receive awards. All right, y'all, next on News One Now, Trump, this fake voter fraud commission is all about voter suppression. But not only that, Pew drops their research. The black vote was at its lowest point in 20 years in 2016. Huh. I wonder if voter suppression had anything to do with that. 28 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, y'all. Trump on Friday signed an executive order establishing a commission to investigate his fake voter fraud claims. Yes, fake. No, he's the guy who said, oh, people just came across the state lines in New Hampshire from Massachusetts and voted. The Republican governor of Massachusetts, New Hampshire said, lie. Republican secretary of state, lie. Even Corey Lewandowski, who's his campaign manager, who's from New Hampshire, said, that ain't true. Trump has continued to assert 3 to 5 million people voted illegally in the country. Where's the proof? Doesn't exist. So, what do we have? A new commission to so-called look at it. And what did he do? He picked a guy, Chris Kobach, out of Kansas, who is one of the biggest voter suppression advocates in the country. This commission comes on the heel of Pew dropping their research that shows, according to new figures from the Census Bureau, 137.5 million Americans voted in the 2016 presidential election. But there was a 20-year decline in black voter turnout. Folks, 2012, 66.6% of African Americans voted. 2016, 59.6%, a 7% decline. Keep in mind, 2008, black women voted at a higher rate than any other group in America. 2012, black women voted at a higher rate than anybody else in America. If you think voter suppression and voter fraud had nothing to do with it, you're crazy. This drop, folks, is the largest for any racial group since the voter turnout for whites dropped from just over 70% in 1992 to nearly 61% in 1996. But keep in mind, what did we see in Wisconsin? 200,000 people impacted by voter ID. Joining us is Nicole Austin Hillary, First Director and Counsel with the Brennan Center here in D.C. Of course, our panel is still with us. And bottom line is this here. I don't care what anybody says. You can sit here and spin this. You can say, well, it was Obama wasn't on the ballot. No, this wasn't the lowest in 8 years, lowest in 20 years. Mm-hmm. Voter suppression is the reason for this.
Yeah, Roland, people are fearful. They are. We know that Chris Kobach has been the one of the main architects of the voter suppression effort that's taken place across the country. He was behind Arizona's effort. He was behind many efforts. And the fact that President Trump has just appointed him to be the co-chair with Vice President Pence of this voter fraud commission speaks volumes. Voters have been afraid of what the suppressive efforts might do to the vote. And it has indeed kept some people away from the polls. That has been the fear. That has been the concern.
And let's look at Wisconsin. So even though the courts allowed Wisconsin's voter ID law to go forward, what they then did was they said, oh, we're going to drag our feet. A federal judge had to order Governor Scott Walker's office to come into his court to say, why are you taking so long issuing the voter IDs? And not only that, that was a county administrator in one of the cities who I think it was in Green Bay, who specifically said she was not going to put an early voting location on a college campus because she said too many of those students vote Democrat.
Well, this is not new, is it, Roland? Look, we all know civil rights history. We know that there have been times when the court has made certain orders. We saw this in Brown v. Board. Even when the court orders jurisdictions to do a certain thing, we know that oftentimes jurisdictions will slow down the implementation because they have other motives. So we see that happening across the country, even when courts have been ruling against some of these suppressive efforts. And look, here's the real issue, Roland. And I said this. I was on your show before, and I said this. If Mr. Trump really wants to have a discussion about voter fraud and really wants to change the election system in this country and make it more efficient and effective and ensure that the Russians aren't going to be hacking us, he would be looking at what kinds of things can we implement, like automatic voter registration, to ensure that our systems work better. So anybody in this country who thinks that this voter fraud commission is really going to get at the heart of the problem, they're fooling themselves. Looking at real reforms that are going to make our systems better and make it easier for as many Americans as possible to engage in the election system, that's what a commission really needs to be looking at.
But Eugene, unfortunately, Republicans don't want that. Republicans, right. We see in North Carolina, we see just in Iowa where they passed the voter ID law. In Michigan, they're trying to do it as well. You see where they're trying to pull back on the efforts. They don't want to see automatic voter registration. They actually don't want to see voter education. This is a clear effort to stymie the black vote because they saw what happened in 2008, 2012, and they're trying to hold on to power as best as they can, and they're using legal means, skirting the laws, to do it.
Look, you know, I'm not supportive of voter suppression. I think what happened in North Carolina.
And you call it voter suppression.
Yeah.
You know, because your fellow black conservative, Raynard Jackson, swears that voter suppression doesn't exist.
Raynard,
I'm sure he's going to text me in a second, he's stuck on stupid.
Let me put it this way. Between Raynard, Diamond, and Omarosa, and Silk, they got their own issues. But, you know, this, you know, common sense Republican here, you know, I don't believe in voter suppression. I think what happened in North Carolina is reprehensible. I think what happened in Wisconsin is reprehensible. I believe the right to vote should be protected with all costs. I believe the access to vote should be protected with all costs. So that's where I stand on. You know, I think, you know, you're not going to find me here defending this. But, you know, Raynard Westendorfer or Omarosa or Diamond and Silk.
Like, yeah, but the idea, Roland, of people making it harder for people to vote, to voter suppression, whether it's ID laws, whether it's not opening up voter stations, whether it's opening up few of them, is fundamentally repugnant to the Constitution and what this country stands for. Think about it. The concept of having less people vote than more people vote, it runs counter to our democracy. And these are elected officials who are engaged in this with a legal kind of foundation or legal overlay to it. And even when they lose, they still implement it at the state level until made by the federal courts to go in and then implement the piece, not just the policy.
It's the policy.
It really is.
The informal policy of the Republican Party. The question is, what are we going to do about it? I mean, there's all these education, voter education campaigns. Is there anything going on? You know, obviously, cross-check is a huge underreported issue. What are we doing about it?
There are several things that we're doing. Number one, folks need to understand that elections officials across the country are speaking out against this. So the very officials who have to monitor and oversee how elections run in their various jurisdictions are speaking out. The Secretary of State of Connecticut, the Secretary of State of Kentucky, these are all folks who are questioning this commission and are saying this is a problem and we are going to be very tentative about following any directives that come out of this commission. That's number one. Number two, organizations like the Brennan Center Center and some other civil rights organizations are doing FOIA requests, because we know that if we start questioning the information that underlines this commission, that we hopefully can get to some real information that may allow us to challenge this. And then there are some members of Congress right now who are actually looking at some legislative efforts to try and block the implementation of this commission.
But there's only one real answer to this, though. And that real answer is that the Democrats get organized at the grassroots level and take back some of these 1,000 or 1,100 seats they lost at the state level, county level,
that's already
and
happened.
Beyond. And it may be happening, but it's not happening
that's
fast
already
enough.
Happened. There's a record number of people who registered to run.
But you've got to win those seats because they control these voter suppression efforts.
Virginia, we're going to see it in Virginia this year. We're going to see what you just said, I think, probably on the 13th with the turnout and at the end of the year in Virginia.
Can't happen fast enough.
And I have to say, you know, the Brennan Center is a nonpartisan organization.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So let me just say this, though. We know from our work and our studies that the majority of jurisdictions where these voter suppression tactics have taken place are in states that have been controlled by Republicans.
Right. Exactly.
So we will say this.
That ain't called that's not nonpartisan. That's called truth.
It is the truth. It is the truth, Roland. Thank you.
Real news.
Which is why I'm not afraid to say those are Republican states where this has happened. So if people want a different result, perhaps they need to look at electing different leaders.
Exactly.
Because we have found that in Democratic-controlled jurisdictions, this is not happening. Mm-hmm. Those are jurisdictions where they're actually trying to do things like implement automatic voter registration.
And I'm going to go to Eugene for the last point, but here's the thing, and I was going to make that point. Should I go to my iPad? Kristen Clark just sent me a tweet from the largest committee for civil rights under
my
the law.
Kristen.
And this is what she just said. Important discussion by Roland S. Martin, and this was the first election since 1965 without the heart of the Voting Rights Act in place as a result of the Shelby ruling, which was in 2013 by the Supreme Court. There is a direct link to that Shelby decision in 2013 to the lowest voter turnout of black folks in 20 years, and that was exactly why Republicans did it.
Well, the thing is this. I'm not going to defend it. I think pre-clearance is a good thing. Legacy item of the civil rights movement. I believe that, one more time, states and the federal government should do everything they possibly can to protect folks' right to vote, and that should include pre-clearance.
We have to, Roland, restore the Voting Rights Act. And I thank my friend Kristen for sending that information in to you. This is all part and parcel of a larger effort, and we have to understand that our efforts to protect the vote have to be multi-pronged. We have to deal with the suppression efforts. We have to deal with restoring the voting rights, and we have to deal with trying to get voting reforms implemented in the states across the country.
Well, let me say this here real quick. First of all, Nicole, thank you very much. Let me say this here to all the folks out there who are not black, okay? The reality is here. We need all you old white folks to also say something, because you're the ones who are most impacted by the voter ID law in Wisconsin. You're impacted when they're forcing you to have to travel to a location to be certified with your voter ID. We need young white folks to also say something when they're moving these voting locations off of college campuses. You know, we also need Latinos, those who are Vietnamese, those who are Chinese, those who are Korean, anybody where you get to have a voting ballot in your native tongue as a result of the 1965 Voting Rights Act. Voter suppression is not just about African Americans, because the reality is, as I keep trying to tell y'all about identity politics, black folks have fought to make this America a more perfect union, and others have benefited. So we need other folks to stand up loudly and clearly to say this is wrong. And oh, a lot of you broke Republicans out there, you're also impacted by this, because if you don't have a voter ID in rural America, you also get screwed as well. So sure, go ahead and say, oh, just the black folks. But all of a sudden, when you see your rights are being taken as well, then you're gonna see how we feel. Mm-hmm. Cut up next on News One Now. White supremacists armed with torches and marched in Virginia to protect their so-called white heritage. Oh, I'm trying to let y'all know, we're not going anywhere. You can have all the torches you want to. We're going to torch you every time. 16 before top of the hour, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Oh, the white supremacists were all out in force over the weekend in Virginia because they want to keep their white supremacist statues. They're saying that don't remove the statues because that's protecting white heritage. Really? Y'all, look at this photo here. Check this out. okay? Seen the video of the torches and everything? Sitting here saying, we're protecting white heritage. Who was out there as well? Richard Spencer, you know, the white supremacist who I destroyed right here on TV One. They gathered around the statue of General Robert E. Lee on Saturday night in Charlottesville chanting, "You will not replace us." Right. Okay. One of them has something to say. Play the soundbite. I don't want to say their name.
Why?
Just play the soundbite. Do we have it? Do we have him talking? Okay. Whatever. Earlier that day, protesters and counter-protesters fought in front of the statue. Police moved in. Everybody left. There were no reports of injuries. But I keep trying to tell y'all when it comes to these folks here, we're not going anywhere, so I don't want to hear y'all anymore. First of all, Mayor Mike Ziner said the protest was either profoundly ignorant or aimed to instill fear in minority populations in a way that harkens back to the days of the KKK. Let's go to Georgia. A sheriff there is accused of exposing himself in a city park. Investigators say on Saturday night, DeKalb County Sheriff Jeffrey Mann led officers on a quarter-mile foot chase before they finally caught him. He is charged with indecency and obstruction of justice of an officer, both charges of misdemeanors. He's been a sheriff since 2014. The Atlanta Police Department released a statement saying Mann is working with the city to clear the charges. And he said, "I'm a sheriff. You should throw these charges out."
Well, it doesn't work that way.
We call it blue privilege.
Gotcha. A quick thinking bus driver is being called a hero after rescuing dozens of students from a burning school bus in South Carolina. Last week, one of the ninth grade students on the bus told the driver, Teresa Strobley, he smells smoke. She then pulled the vehicle over, got all of the 56 kids off the bus in under 1 minute. Seconds later, the bus was engulfed with flames.
Wow.
She did exactly what she had been trained to do in terms of evacuating those students and looking out for their safety.
Wow. No one was hurt in the fire. The cause is under investigation. Wow.
Just doing our job.
Yeah.
Every day, doing our job. Protecting those babies, 56 of them.
What she's else like, look, we got to go. You move 56 kids in 1 minute.
She deserves
and they move, too. It's one thing to try to get them to move. She moved them out just from the smell of smoke. Just a real hero. Shiro.
She deserves a Congressional Medal of Honor.
All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, we'll talk to a couple that's involved in the booming plastic surgery business. So they're next, News One Now. Plus, a recap of some commencement speeches over the weekend, not Betsy DeVos. 11 before top of the hour, News 1-9 TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now. With Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Surgery is a booming business. Last week, I talked with a couple who is very much involved in this practice for more than 20 years. Here is my interview. Dr. Michael Jones and Kathleen Trigg Jones are proving to be a true power couple. The couple financed their own reality show series, We Are the Joneses, that goes behind the scenes of their successful plastic surgery business, dealing with all types of cosmetic surgery from keloid scar removal to butt lifts. A former TV news reporter and actress, Kathleen supports the medical business while expanding her business and starting a new talk show. Here to tell us how their careers have led them to this latest business venture is Dr. Michael Jones and Kathleen Trigg Jones. Okay, so why'd y'all decide to want to self-finance your own television show?
Well, good morning, Roland.
Good morning.
That's a good question. You know, I think the bottom line for us is that we wanted to be in control. We really didn't want anyone else to portray how we should look on television. I think there's enough of that. So we decided that we wanted to change that up a little bit, put out something positive, something that is aspirational, inspirational, that represents us and our community in the way that we think that we should be represented.
Exactly. So there's enough of the docuseries out there that have so many negative images, from the ratchetness to the, you know, to the drink throwing, the tablecloths being pulled, and those images just really aren't the images that are us and not the images that we wanted to portray. So this is why we decided to embark on it and do it ourselves.
So and so in terms of beyond the television show, I mean, what is your the business that you do every single day? Because I mean, you're talking about
I mean, clearly, an expanding field when you talk about plastic surgery. It's all the rage, obviously, on the West Coast, but it's spread really to across the country.
It really has. And yes, Lexington Plastic Surgeons, our business, which is located in five different states, in New York, New Jersey, right here in D.C., Atlanta, and Miami, we are in the business of beautification. But it's not really the storyline and the foundation for our show is not how we make people beautiful on the outside, but it's really showing the transformation of how we create and make them more beautiful and feel more beautiful on the inside that really we're trying to put out there. And sometimes it's not what we do in the operating room, it's what Kathleen Trigg Jones does as an Emmy Award-winning journalist and how she interviews them, how she talks to them, how she brings out those empathic stories.
This is why I keep him with me, because he can flow like that. But you know, the thing is that when we started, or Dr. Jones started, at Lexington Plastic Surgeons, out of the brownstone of the kitchen of our brownstone in Harlem, 20 years ago, you know, there was this perception that black people didn't have plastic surgery. And so it was kind of on the down low. It was hush hush. People did come, but they didn't want anyone to know what they were doing. Where now, you know, with so much attention in the world of plastic surgery, any and everyone is walking through our doors. People don't want to live being unhappy anymore. And if you can, you know, have a little nip tuck, you know, a little Botox here, or in some cases, something that's, you know, much less vain. We're helping patients that have disfigurements, you know, things that have caused them great pain throughout their lives, and we're able to change that and see that transformation, make them feel better about themselves. And that's why we do what we do.
Have you talked some folks out of plastic surgery?
Absolutely. I mean, I would say that probably 20% of the patients we see in a day, we're telling them, hey, you're not an ideal candidate, either for a health reason, or they may have had too much plastic surgery already, or they just are looking for something that wouldn't be served well with plastic surgery. And so we have a host of non-surgical things that we can often offer, but we are often telling patients, nope, you're not an ideal person for this. You've had too much. It's time to stop.
And in fact, in our show, even just this past weekend, we had a patient who's from this area, because we have an office here in the D.C. area, but her blood pressure was too high, and she wanted to have surgery, and we had to tell her no. You know, well, he had to tell her no. I have to keep separating that. I am not a doctor. I'm not a medical professional. I just support.
Well, look, I mean, I certainly know folks out there who certainly have issues in terms of trying to get those fixed, whether it's children or adults as well. And so it's one of the reasons why plastic surgery is an option for many of them. And so we certainly appreciate it. How many episodes on your show, and when does it air?
Well, you can catch us every Saturday night on Centric TV, 10 o'clock p.m. And
we have 13 episodes.
13 episodes, and they're half hours. So we give you two back-to-back episodes every weekend.
Okay.
And at the risk of sounding like a politician, we need all your viewers to watch.
Yeah, because you know what? This is not just about another plastic surgery show. There's enough of that. This is really about a couple who decided to work together, put our resources behind what we believe in, and show the world that positive television, portraying blacks in a positive way, can be supported. So we're looking for the support from our community so we can continue and you can continue to do what we do.
All right. I certainly appreciate it, folks. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Roland.
Thank you.
A round of commencement speeches when we come back. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Commencement speeches all across the country, not Betsy DeVos. We got some for you. First off, here is Senator Kamala Harris speaking at her alma mater, Howard University, over the weekend.
Graduates, indeed, we have a fight ahead. And it's not a fight between Democrats and Republicans. It's not rich versus poor or urban versus rural. This is a fight to define what kind of country we are.
Dillard University had Janelle Monae as their speaker.
Graduates of 2017, the future. I celebrate
as you remember the power of grace and pride. And I challenge you to choose freedom over fear. Thank you, and God bless you.
She played one of the hidden figures, but the real-life hidden figure, Katherine Johnson, gave the commencement speech at Hampton University. She sat on the dais, but delivered her speech via video.
Always do your best for whatever you're doing. Do your best, but enjoy it. Enjoy life as it passes by you. Don't miss anything.
All right, then. So certainly congratulations to all who gave commencement speeches for graduates. Birthday shout-out time. Retired Baltimore Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis turns 42. NFL Hall of Famer Emmitt Smith turns 48. I played his golf tournament this weekend. We'll have that video later on the show. Also, Ron Simmons, the first black world championship wrestling champion, turns 59 years old. On this day in history, you can skip that one. That's irrelevant.
Kappas. Go ahead.
They were chartered in Indiana. Scott. That's that little youth.
Just say it, the
that's,
news.
That's that little youth group Scott's a member of. 1946, Camellia Williams becomes the first African-American woman to sign a contract with a major American opera company. She debuts with the New York City Opera, the title role of Madame Butterfly. Y'all, I got to go. Tomorrow, we'll cover more Trump lies. Y'all know we got lots of that. I'll see y'all. Have a great one. Holla!
So you want the truth? Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now.